The hearing of the Committee on Financial Services will come to order. This is the semi-annual hearing that we have pursuant to the Humphrey Hawkins Act with the Chairman of the Board of Governors of the Federal Reserve, who will be testifying on the state of the economy and has presented the monetary policy report to the Congress. Under the procedures, the Chairman alternates. This is done twice a year. Once the Chairman goes to the Senate first, once he goes to the House first. Since in this rotation he went to the Senate first, one assumes that there will be no opportunities to game the stock market today. Those all happened yesterday. So people can stay through the whole hearing. Reporters won't have to leave to run to report to the services. So people can hysterically overreact to the Chairman's perfectly sensible statements, which is, of course, the pattern. Although I know people who are in the market explain that they are not overreacting themselves. They are, in fact, reacting to other people's overreaction, although the consequence is the same. I say that because in the interest of being able to have rational policy discussions unconstrained by irrelevant factors, I just would plead with people not to read excessively into what the Chairman says, not to read excessively into what we say. We ought to be able to have rational conversations about the important topics of today's hearings without these overreactions. And I would say, since that may not be possible, as far as I'm concerned, people overreact at their own peril. And I don't think the Chairman or anybody else ought to be held accountable because people engage in this form of anticipatory hysteria. As to the subject at hand, and under the rules, there will be four opening statements by myself, the ranking member of the full committee, the chair of the subcommittee on domestic and international monetary policy, and the ranking member of the subcommittee. The chairman has very graciously agreed to stay till 2 p.m., and I am deeply appreciative. This is a very large committee. We will take one 15 or 20-minute break, but members can gauge that appropriately, and we'll be able to accommodate more of the members than we usually can. Mr. Chairman, I appreciate your willingness to do this. I will be asking the chairman about some of the specifics of his testimony and of the areas particularly relevant to monetary policy, but I want to begin with an expression of disappointment, not in Chairman Bernanke, but in the business community, many of my conservative colleagues. I believe that we are at a very sensitive point in the making of economic policy in this country. There is, on the part of the business community and many of its supporters, the view that a full embrace of globalization, of technological change, essentially of public policies that allow capital to be fully mobilized and fully mobile, able to be employed to its best use, that this is in the best interests of society as a whole. For some time now, until fairly recently, that was the governing policy in the U.S. and in much of the rest of the world. That has now come to an end, I believe, temporarily, perhaps for a long temporary period, because increasingly average citizens in America and in other countries have come to doubt that the growth that results from this policy of entirely free capital to move to wherever it finds its best return, people have come to doubt that this is in their interest. Indeed, there are a large number of people throughout the world who believe that they're being hurt by this. And in consequence, we are at a policy deadlock. I think people should understand that the chances of an extension of trade promotion authority going through are quite slender at this point, unless there is some change in the attitude of many who are its advocates. My own view is that if they were in fact to come to an agreement in the Doha round, that the resulting agreement, if they reach it as they are currently talking about it, wouldn't pass the House of Representatives. There is resistance, in my view, unfortunately, to the general approach the President took on immigration. In almost all of the important areas in which, and let me just say, we, this committee reported out earlier this week on a voice vote a bill for foreign investment. And there was a paradox, because if you talk to the people in the business community, it's the ranking member and I and the former chair of that subcommittee dealing with New York and others who were involved in that, if you talk to them, they were on the whole pleased with our result because it was better than they had expected. If you read some of the business press, they were concerned that it was too restrictive. Well, that's an example of where we are. It was a bill that was more restrictive than some might have liked on foreign investment, but better than some people had expected, reflecting this mood. So I just want to reiterate what I've said earlier. Many of us are prepared to work towards policies that are pro-growth, that do take advantage of what you can have when capital is allowed to reach its best level and find its greatest return, when technology can be fully taken advantage of. But only if we put in place public policies that make sure that that is more fairly shared, and in particular, that reverse the tendency, which the chairman has acknowledged, and I appreciate that, which even the president has acknowledged, that inequality has been growing. As I said before, inequality is an essential part of a capitalist economy. No one is trying to get rid of it, at least no one's sensible. But it can also become excessive to the point where it is socially harmful and economically beyond what is needed for the capitalist system. We're at that point. We're at a point where there is an excessive amount of inequality in this economy, and it is growing, and not just in this economy. I noted a comment recently, and I'm giving myself the extra minute or two that I took for explaining it the first. I recently read an article which said that in the last set of state elections in India, every chief minister who was seen as pro-foreign was defeated in terms of the economy. So there is a worldwide concern. We see in Latin America where an anti-democratic left is threatening the democratic left, in part because of this economic unhappiness. I don't see any recognition of that. I regret that, but people who will continue to resist are trying to do something about health care, are trying to do something about the right of employees to join unions, even something as minimalist as the minimum wage, should not be surprised when they run into absolute resistance to other things which they will argue are good for the economy. With that, I will recognize the ranking member.